Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Shows Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Big night tonight around the sports world. Maybe nothing bigger than where the universe revolves, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Let's ask Craig Simpson about it. The Insider, that's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Craig Simpson, former NHL forward, two-time Stanley Cup champion, current Sportsnet color analyst. How are we feeling this morning, Craig?
Oh, I'm just rising to get ready to hopefully see what happens tonight. Another adventure in what's going to be, it's been a pretty interesting series to this point, but one that obviously took a big turn in Game 5 in Toronto and gives the Leafs an opportunity to try to do something that they haven't done very effectively over the last couple of decades, that close the series out. So I think it's a great opportunity for them that they made a huge step as a group, as a team, put, you know, their core guys had their best moment from a playoff perspective. And now comes the hard part, getting that fourth win, which is always really something of a challenge.
Craig, you'd seemed a little unimpressed with them after that first win. It sounds like you were more impressed coming off of Game 5. Does a performance like Game 5 give you more confidence in this group to get that, hey, this is the hardest one, to get that in now?
Yeah, I think it's exactly along the way. You learn a little bit about yourself as an individual player. You learn a little bit more about your team. You hope that you can grow in moments that, seem like maybe something's slipping away from you. Can you ramp up your game to another level and bring it back? And, you know, those are the kind of things that you've seen historically with teams that have not found a way to win in the past. You sometimes need to have those cathartic moments where, you know, together you do come to another level and break through the proverbial wall. And so it was that kind of a game for them. It was a defining moment for them. But I like the words of Sheldon Keith even after was, you know, that game kind of disappears if you can't get the fourth win. So you've got that to build off of. But, yeah, without question, the only thing that anybody will be talking about if Tampa ends up moving on to the next round, no one will be talking about Game 5. Everyone will be talking the fact they couldn't win the fourth one. So I think that's the great thing about sport, and that's the great thing about trying to become a Stanley Cup champion is there's lots of moments that are highs and great moments throughout the course of the journey to get there, but they don't matter if you don't ultimately come out at the end and finish the job and get there. And I think that's what really tonight and you know, if they need it Game 7, that's what those moments are going to be all about for this group. But that was a great step to get there anyways.
Yeah, listen, I'm dating myself a little bit here, but that win was you would get the Sports Illustrated DVD. Relive the championship yeah, moments exactly. With the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you'd get that DVD, you'd watch it, and that game is the one where you go, oh, yeah, and then they were down, and we all thought they were out, and they came through, and this would be, though, if they win this series or they went on to win, you would go, this is where they killed the demons, right? Or this is where they started to kill the demons, however you want to spin it. But you didn't have to live things like that through the DVDs like me. You are a winner. You've done this. You're not even just a winner on the ice. You're, again, I brought it up last time, you're a winner of the star and the silver screen as well, right? Like, guy's been on almost more broadcast than anybody in this country nationally. But what do you think it is? Like, because Killer Instinct, right? This is the million-dollar question, is like, what is Killer Instinct? And so I think it's more important coming from people who have won like you. So when you hear those words and you look at tonight, what does Killer Instinct mean to you?
Well, it's like anything you go after in your life. You know, if you covet the prize so badly and want it so badly, and that's what your focus is, it's almost destined not to happen. If you covet a prize, but you think and focus of what you have to do to get it on a daily basis and what you need to execute to find that ending. I mean, that's the hardest part of, you know, looking at the Stanley Cup and going, oh man, I've been dreaming my whole life for this and I want this. It's the moments along the way that you have to always be focused on, and not the end result, but going, what are we not doing to give ourselves a chance to be successful? Like for tonight, for the Leafs, they got to know we've got to have our best start. We've got to play our best game. We've got to take our physical and our mental game to another level. And to a credit, that's where I'm saying, in the third period, they were able to do some of that. So how do you get there? Well, you revisit your in your mind saying, you know, what did that feel like? I remember as a player, for me, when you're playing at your best, you always try to visualize, what did my body feel like? What was my mind thinking when I was playing at that best? And that's where you try to get your body and your mind back to. And if you've never had those successes, or you've constantly been in situations where you had a chance to win, but you faltered both individually and as a team, it's hard to erase those mental, you know, thoughts in your mind. So I think that's when everyone says you learn how to win. Tampa's been through those battles. They've had some negative things, even getting to the Stanley Cup in 2015. They weren't quite ready to be there yet, and they weren't quite ready to finish it. You know, I think it is part of the learning journey, like everything in life, and I guess we'll get a first lesson of how this group will take that third period of Game 5, and can they translate that into 60 minutes in Game 6?
I think that's a really fascinating answer, and especially since we had Steve Thomas on the show earlier today, and he had mentioned that times where his groups fell short, he felt as though it was that inability to stay in the moment. And it seems like that's a lot of what you're saying is, hey, you have to not only be in the moment and be focused on the task at hand tonight, but you also have to remind yourself of how you accomplished these tasks in the past and use them to try and get yourself into the best position possible. I wonder how much of that, though, is conscious versus muscle memory.
Yeah, I think the consciousness of what your focus is today as a player to get ready for, you know, in many aspects, let's face it, this is kind of like a game 7, right? Because, yeah, I mean, even though you got the next one at home, which is good for Toronto, you just don't want to give the two-time champs another chance to get back. So I always think that you're consciously going, again, not about, oh, I got to win tonight, consciously in your mind as an individual, and then you do it collectively as a group, saying, when is, for me, when is Craig Simpson the best player, and what do I need to do? Okay, I'm my best when my legs are moving. I have to play at a higher pace. I got to be intense. I got to finish every check. I'm at my best when I'm going to the net and I'm battling in front. And, you know, I know it's just a little example, but I'm not thinking about, oh, we got to win, you know, game 6 to get to the next round. If everybody's got that mindset, if I'm Austin Matthews, when are you at your best? Well, I mean, you're at your best when the tempo of your game is so high. You're turning pucks over. You got great active stick. You're finishing your check in the D zone, transitioning to offense. My legs are moving. I'm driving into the hole. I curl and drag and get my shot off quickly. You know, all those little things. So there's the muscle memory will come from your mind being focused on what you do the best as a player. And, you know, it's a powerful thing when you feel a part of a team that everybody is at that level. And, you know, that's ultimately what you aspire to get to. And the two experiences I've had with, you know, winning the Stanley Cup, both those teams, it wasn't just the individual playing well. It was the collective and the group that played all well together, understanding what made us good as a group, and we went out and executed. And that's challenge number one tonight. And if they don't win and Tampa makes a, you know, a great effort tonight, then it'll be challenge number two on Saturday night in Toronto for game 7. But I think that's the focus, as opposed to just wanting so badly to take that next step. And if you're thinking about the end prize instead of the process to get there, that's when you typically fall into trouble.
So, Craig, you said for, you know, your individual process, part of that was getting to the front of the net and battling in there and getting to those high danger areas. That's obviously an area of the ice that you thrived in. It's somewhere the Leafs haven't always gotten to. And I know you just laid out some of, hey, what does taking care of the individual stuff look like for Austin Matthews? What do you expect from William Nylander tonight? Because he has been pretty up and down in this series, and his downs are obvious when he's not getting to those dangers, he's not playing with that force in the offensive zone, and his highs have tended to be when he uses those feet and he uses that puck skill to create high danger chances. What are you hoping for from William Nylander if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight?
Yeah, I think just what you laid out, really, you know, you can see a noticeable difference in A, the body language when he's on top of his game, and that's always a big thing when you look at a player. I mean, he's hopping, his legs are moving, he's got the puck, he's confident with handling it. He's not afraid to use his speed and legs to get to the open ice. So you look at that and say, if I'm William, that's what I'm trying to harness. Because you have seen, you know, when he's kind of disinterested or the intensity's not there, or he's turning away from checks, he's not going into the battle, then, yeah, you're not nearly as effective as a player. So I think the two go hand in hand. You know, I said after game four, you know, a tough loss, but maybe the silver lining is in the third period, you got a couple goals, you get a little bit more confidence, you feel a little better about yourself. And so after that last game, both he and John, who, you know, were guys of targets that we need offense from them, they came through and they were a big part of that. So that's got to be something that you try to build off of and play even that much more of an intense game here in game six. But there's no question when Nylander's on his game, it's his legs are moving. He's not afraid. He's jumping. He's confident with the puck. And I would expect you'd see that from him tonight, given the fact that the last two games have been a pretty positive last at least four periods for him.
Yeah, it's funny because Nylander, I find, is one of the more easily identifiable. Does he have it tonight, guys?
And you like can you said, see it visually, right?
It's like the most. I would argue like there's two guys in this series where you can tell it immediately, and it's Kucherov and it's Nylander. Yeah. Where you go, he's got it tonight, or he's just like, oh, okay, he's messing around a little bit here. I find that it's impossible right now to evaluate John Tavares. Like, so he gets off the schneid, right, Craig? He gets that puck that goes off his skate. Then he makes a beautiful play, a patient play, to set up the Morgan Rielly goal. But a friend asked me this, and he went, did John Tavares have a good game? And I said, well, yeah, because he had the assist and he had the goal. But then I thought about it more, and I'm just like, I don't know how we're evaluating him right now. I honestly don't. Like, and you've watched a ton of this team, and you've watched a ton of this player, and I'm curious how you're evaluating Tavares right now and what you think the Leafs need from him most.
Well, you know, I think there are little subtleties that not every player, you know, stands out in a way that visually, like you're talking about, you can be judgmental on it. You start, I know it seems to some like face-offs, okay, well, that can't be all that important. But in this series, you know, he's 76%+. And so he's gone 81%, 78%. He had a bad game three at 40, and then he jumped back with 92% in game four and 75% in game five. And so you think of power plays, you think of D-zone starts, you think of key moments, whether it's to start the 5-on-3 that they scored on. You know, he scored 11 seconds after he won the draw. He doesn't get an assist on it, but he's in there on it. So I think the criticism is that, you know, you look at money as opposed to what the guy does collectively. You know, even this season when he's been criticized, he had, 78 points. He had his fifth best season of his 13-year career. So, you know, it's not like he's not contributing, but he maybe doesn't contribute at the level that you with the contract would like. I think for John, last game was the example. Like when you have a game where you are 75% in the draw, you did some key things in the special teams, you are a disruptor on the power play in front of the net a little bit, which you wouldn't necessarily think would be his role, but it kind of has developed into that. And then, as you mentioned, he made subtle plays. The Morgan Rielly play, that's such a huge goal there, and that was such a really you know, a brilliant play that started it off. So I think you're always going to get criticized. For John, again, on a night like tonight, it's just being good, solid. Win the battle, win the matchup. If he can finish the night at plus one or plus two, then you know you've done your job. And I think nobody's ever going to look at John and say he gives you exactly what some people would like to have. But I think he's been effective. And I think that he's got to just focus on, again, another guy that's got to get his legs moving and play at a high pace. And when those big moments can happen, I think instinctively he makes the right play, which he did in game five.
Craig, on the other side of the ice, Tampa facing elimination for the first time this series, and one of the first times in quite a while after winning the Stanley Cup in back-to-back years. You've been there, and what does it mean to be kind of with your back up against the wall, and what do you expect out of Tampa's response tonight on home ice?
Yeah, I just think the mindset of a team that's been through this moment and doesn't get like we were talking earlier, doesn't get phased with what do I have to focus on tonight. I think their mentality always is you lose a game, you play that much harder the next day. It is a little bit of human nature. You get upset, you come back with a better effort. You have a bad game, you come back with a better effort. So I think it's kind of a reflex reaction for them collectively as a group. But even John Cooper, I thought his comments yesterday were good and insightful in the fact that just because Toronto hasn't ever, this group hasn't been able to close off a series and win, and the fact that Tampa hasn't lost, you know, in an elimination game for a few years, doesn't mean that you just put your sticks out there and you expect, well, Toronto won't win because they never have, and we won't lose because we haven't for a long time either. I mean, that's the beauty of sport. So it gives you the confidence, but you also know some special things are going to have to happen either way, because Tampa might play their best game tonight and Jack Campbell stands on his head and Toronto plays their best game and you lose. So that, I think, is where Tampa collectively knows that they're calm in these situations, knows that they've handled them before, knows that they can play in big pressure games. But the reality is you still got to go out there and hope something bad doesn't happen or somebody on the other end doesn't change the narrative. And I think that's what's great about, you know, these types of elimination type games, because it is the reality that anything can happen. And we've seen it time and time again in playoff hockey.
Craig, this was really enlightening. Have a great call tonight, man.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Talk to you later.
Take care. Craig Simpson, two-time Stanley Cup champion and current Sportsnet color analyst. We are lucky to have him. That was really, really, that was good. that really, really shaped a lot of things that we think about tonight. And that insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I hate when you guys act like I never get it, all right?
Well,
I get it
sometimes. It's sneaky because you look like you're going to move on, and then you
sneak
the insider.
Don't try to be jumping on my sexy reads, you know? Like, good reads or Don Valley's try to get it.
You know what? You've changed my mind over the last week or so remembering the insider reads, so I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You're on the ball.
I feel like I'm on a little bit of a heater here. Okay, so I thought Craig's answers were great. I really do. And maybe that's a little too deep into some of the questions about the mentality here and the conscious and the subconscious elements of this, but he's a winner, and it's a hard thing to bottle. It's a hard thing to understand. But I think it's really interesting that two guys have come on today, and two guys who have played and two guys who have been in those huge moments, and they both brought up the mental side and staying in the moment. And that's it for me, and that's what so many of us watch, and we feel the same way, right? Is can this team do that? Can they just remember the successes they've had to get there and not the failures that have caused them to come up short? Can they not look past Tampa Bay? I don't know if that's so much the issue as it is looking backwards, but that was why it was, again, so euphoric to win that game, because the Leafs are used to losing games tied 2-2 at home against a good team and no showing and being criticized and going into we're never going to win mode. And that was so different. And so the mental
especially
side
the way
of this
they won
tonight,
being down 2-0, like that adds right to the euphoric feeling. It wasn't just a tightly 1-1, 2-2 game. Mm-hmm. It's like they were really out of it. And to pull that back,
well, they
then
did the thing
to win on home ice.
they did the thing you were most worried about. They came out flat, and you assume they're dead at that point, and then they come back, and then they get the counterpunch from Tampa, and then they push back from that. They kind of just kept repeating the things that you'd be hoping to see.
Well, you guys know I like to get sentimental about sports, and that is all I can think of right now when Craig talked about the collective, is that's, to me, what makes hockey so special is... Like, we're watching basketball last night, and I love the NBA. This isn't a shot at the NBA at all. But it's like, it's really about the individual. It's like Giannis Antetokounmpo went out there, he scored 40-plus points, and his team won. And there was no other path to victory other than that. Like, there wasn't. And he, everything that happens off of Giannis Antetokounmpo opens things for other players, right? It's about his individual greatness, and his teammates are extremely secondary. Like, Grayson Allen played 30 minutes in that game. And it's like, what do you have to say about Grayson Allen today other than the crowd, the Boston crowd was ready with a chant for him. But hockey is like, you know, they talk about like what happens after death, and do you just become one of piece of the universe, right? Like, do you become part of the wave? Like, are you just molecules? And that's how I feel about hockey sometimes. It's like, you're just a part of a collective. It's about that entire team. And when Craig is reflecting on his wins, it's that everyone had a piece of it. Like, think about the team, like anybody that's listening to this right now, think about the teams you remember in hockey that won. It's like, yeah, there were great individual performers, but you remember the other players on those teams, right? Like Anaheim, when they won, you remember Sammy Paulson, right? And how that guy just dug in and was their stud defensive player who had those series where he would just shut down the other team's lines. You have those memories, those core memories of everyone contributing. And that's what we get caught up in the narratives of this stuff at times. And of course we do, because the best players still matter the most because they dictate the goal scoring, which is ultimately the way that this is determined. But tonight is about Matthews. It's about Marner, but it's also about David Kampf. And it's also about the small, it's about Jason Spezza speaking to his group in the dressing room. It's about contributions from everyone. And can you as a group find that? Like, can you as the collective get in sync and find that moment, find that touch point where everyone is pulling in the same direction, contributing, and it's wave after wave of the same mentality and the same success. And we've never seen it with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We haven't seen it in a closing moment. And the opportunity to have that tonight is why I think hockey is so special and why we love it so much, is because you can relate to success in a group. And that's what they need to have tonight, is just success in a group. Be the wave.
I love the camp mention too, because obviously he's had a great series and a great season, and the PK when it's on has been so special, and he's going to be tasked with a lot of D-zone faceoffs tonight. And the name, I know he's not this level of faceoff guy, but Yannick Perreault was like one of my favorite Leafs forever. And it was the same kind of role. And it's like, okay, well, no one should really like have an attachment to Yannick Perreault, but that's what those kind of high leverage performances do for role players and guys further down the thing. And you see it in all sports, but it's going to feel particularly special these next couple days and these next couple weeks, if things go well, if the Leafs finally get over this hump. Something that's not quite as special, a hump that we need to see another Toronto team get over, the Toronto Blue Jays bats. It's been not great, and Vladimir Guerrero is wearing it a little bit. Dan Schulman mentioned it on the broadcast yesterday. We're going to talk to him after the break about what's going on with the Jays bats, how maybe they can get out of it. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590. The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus, joining us now to talk about the Blue Jays. But before we get into the Blue Jays, he is the play-by-play announcer for the Blue Jays on Sportsnet. Much bigger things going on for him this weekend. It's the proud papa, Dan Schulman. Dan, how are you, man?
I'm good. Yeah, I have a son graduating from university down in the States, so that's why I'm off for this weekend. Mr. Devlin will be handling play-by-play on the Blue Jays. Tabby and I each have sons graduating, actually, this weekend. So it'll be Matt Devlin and Joe Siddle doing the games from the Trop. But I am a proud dad. This is number three, so I'm getting there. So I'm very excited to get in the car tomorrow and drive down to Syracuse for the weekend.
Obviously, you'd be very happy that your son's graduating regardless, but if you had to pick which road trip you were going to miss, Tampa's got to be pretty high up there, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's not the greatest baseball environment, obviously, and the Blue Jays don't tend to play very well down there. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, Blake, to be honest with you. So, I was very happy to be in New York during the week. Always love going to New York, love the city, love the atmosphere at the ballpark and that sort of thing. So, I didn't pick it, but it worked out pretty well.
Shots fired at your boy Dickie V, though. Like, no Dickie V.
That's fine. He's like, I doubt he's listening.
Yeah, right. So, Dan, I'm listening to the broadcast yesterday, as I'm one to do. You're calling a great game. And then Berríos is doing Berríos things. At first, he's dealing. And I'm going, okay, he's going good. Things are normalizing here. Because before the game started, I referenced how it felt like a little bit of a hinge moment for him early on in the season. I get it's May, but if you look at like the strikeout numbers and the hard contact rate that you've brought up a couple of times we've talked about him with you, they haven't been great. And he's dealing, and he's looking good, and then he runs into a bit of a trouble spot. And you brought up how, you know, that start wasn't reflective of really what you thought we saw from Berríos. And you mentioned that he took a step forward. And I wonder what part of that you think was the most, like, take a step forward element of Berríos.
Okay, I'm glad you asked. I actually was thinking, are we going to talk about this? Because I do want to make this point. And, you know, I think you know me well enough. I'm not going to say something, you know, if the sky's not blue, I'm not going to say the sky is blue.
100%.
But I thought he did take a major step forward. I said something about the Blue Jays offense, whether it was yesterday or the night before, I can't remember. Sometimes when you hit is as important as how much you hit. And for a pitcher, sometimes when you give up those hits is as important as how many hits you gave up. So in 5 1/3 yesterday, he allowed 6 base runners, 5 hits, 1 walk. That's great. If he had spread out those base runners, one per inning, he'd have given up one run because Torres hit a homer. So my point is, what happened to Berríos yesterday was the Yankees clustered their hits together. There were two things happened yesterday. If you remember the two hits before the Torres home run, they were in the 3-4 defense against Rizzo, who hit a ground ball up the middle. Bo got to it, but just couldn't get enough on the throw to get him out. Yep. And then LeMahieu flared one into right field. Like, literally, ground ball bloop. And then Torres hit a 361-foot home run. I'm not choosing to hang any of that on Jose Berríos. And I'll die on that hill. I thought he pitched well that inning, and he gave up 3 runs. And then in his last inning, the 6th inning, I think it was a walk, and then immediately a double that scored a run, and then Richards came in and gave up a base hit that gave up the other run. So, like, I'm not saying he deserved to throw a shutout, but he pitched way better than 5 earned runs in 5 1/3. There was much less hard contact. He had 3 3-up, 3-down innings. He only walked 1 batter. You know, the Yankees were kind of the anti-Blue Jays. Like, if the Blue Jays are going to get 8 hits, they're going to spread them out over 8 innings and maybe score a run, the way things are going for them right now. The Yankees clustered their opportunities together, and I thought there was some, you know, batted ball bad luck for Berríos. And in all honesty, I thought he took a major step forward yesterday.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about you for a second here. No, this is in a good way. And I don't mean this to be like overly complimentary, but I just think that this is actually kind of the state of calling sports right now, especially locally, is that this is really having one of the benefits of having Dan Shulman call the Blue Jays games is that you're actually like a national broadcaster who has like a really big profile. Like, you choose to do the Blue Jays. You want to be doing the Blue Jays. And I think that you do a really good job of balancing your obvious care and connection to this franchise with being someone who can actually give the opinion, and it is credible. It's not like in some markets, and you'll see this when you watch a local telecast, like for me, if I have like League Pass or whatever, it's very, very tilted towards like, I have to be essentially a cheerleader for the team. I don't think that you do that at all, and that's why I think the Berrios thing carries a lot of credibility. And I agree with you to an extent, but I will say this, and like this is the only part of it that I'll push back slightly. I still felt the body language thing, and I brought this up with you, and you said you were going to look for it. And when he left that game, Dan, yeah. When he left the game, again, he looked like someone came up to him and was like, hey, Jose, somebody killed your dog. And he went, what? And like that's what he looked like to me. And I wonder if you're starting to notice that a little bit more. Like there's just an added layer of frustration to him when he got in that jam. And I went, ugh. Like that home run was a joke home run. It's a Yankees ballpark home run. Totally. Like you're right. The start was really good. But the way he responded to that, I kind of went, ugh. Like I could feel it.
I don't see it. The way he responded to that, and I'd have to go back and look at my scorecard. The way he responded to that was by retiring like the next six guys he faced or something like that. You know what I mean? So I don't see it. He is, like I've talked to him, even if he's in a smiley, chatty mood, he's the quietest guy in the room. That's who he is. So I just don't see it. I'm not saying you're wrong and I'm right. I just don't see it. I think he is a competitive guy. I think he's had, listen, he had a lot of hard contact in several of his starts, and I'm sure he's fighting it and feeling for it, because if you go back and look at his baseball reference page over the last, say, 6 years, he is literally as consistent a starting pitcher as there is in baseball. Maybe not, you know, the guy who starts an all-star game, but as consistently good a starting pitcher as there is in baseball. And I'm sure he's got a little bit of, what the heck's going on? Like, what? Why is my velocity is not down? I feel good, this, that, whatever. I don't see it. I'll continue to look for it, but I thought I think in some of his starts when he's been giving up a ton of hard contact, he's done a good job getting out of jams. And I think yesterday, and I wouldn't blame him one bit. Yesterday, if he walked off the mound saying, you know, bleep in Yankee Stadium, if I didn't have bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. Like again, I think had things been a little bit different in terms of the timing of the hits, he could have walked off the mound yesterday and we could have gone, wow, that was great. It's, you know, and there are guys, analytics guys and websites, I'm not familiar with them, where Blake might know where they are, where they no,
he
no,
does.
I'm serious. I mean,
I know what he does. They, he knows where they are.
Where they quantify luck in terms of, did you cluster your hits together or were your hits spread out? The Blue Jays are the kings of non-clustering right now, and Berrios got clustered yesterday, and you know, and you can choose that to mean whatever you want it to mean. But I thought he pitched well, and I don't see the body language thing that you're seeing. But I'll continue to look for it.
Well, no, here's the thing: you're probably right, and that's bothering me because I was really like, if you didn't see it yesterday, then you're never going to see it at all. You know, like it's one of those things. But I just now you've got me questioning whether or not I'm just comparing him to like Vladdy, Lourdes, and Teoscar, where they're so happy and they always look up, that I look at Berrios, I'm like, oh, this guy's depressed. He's so sad all the time. And it's like, well, maybe it's just a case of you see the happiest guys in baseball from time to time. And now you got me all twisted up with my take, Dan. I really don't appreciate it. I'm really hurt by it. Blake, do you have those stats?
Well, I do, and they're not super favorable to Berrios. They would say that, hey, based on sequencing alone, he's probably been about a run unlucky on ERA, but he's also, based on the batted ball data, been actually pretty fortunate because he has given up some of the hardest contact in the league. Dan, what I'm curious about your take on it, and this is maybe, like, sequencing isn't entirely just random, I don't think. And one of the concerns that I have in going through Berrios' profile, and this was the case again yesterday, I think I land somewhere between you and JD in terms of Berrios' optimism, but that curveball seems to be the only pitch he can get swing and misses with right now. And that's even the case on a day like yesterday where, hey, he's not doing too bad with the fastball. He's not doing too bad with the sinker. The curveball is still the only thing he's throwing that's getting swing and miss stuff at a decent rate. And maybe that's the key to the sequencing, is you're not able to get yourself out of trouble right now. Do you think there's anything to that?
So a couple of things. When I mentioned sequencing, bad luck. So early on, I totally agree with you. Hard contact all over the place, lots of concerns, but I thought he did a good job in a couple of those starts to only give up two runs instead of five or six runs.
The two Boston starts especially.
Exactly. Yeah, like he was six innings, eight hits, two runs in one of those, and he could have given up six runs easy in one of those. I'm not saying he is vintage Jose Berrios. He's not. He's not the guy they had for 12 starts last year. He's not the guy Minnesota had for a few years before that. All I'm saying is I thought yesterday was more of a step forward than the line score suggested. It's nothing more than that, really. So he's not pitching as well. Listen, they made him the opening day starter, and I know Gausman wasn't here last year, but there was no, you know, there was no yelling in the streets. How could Barrios be the opening day starter? Like, he earned it. He's that, you know, he's that established of a guy. He's got a ways to go to get there. All I'm saying is that I think he took a step forward yesterday. I have not looked specifically, Blake, at, like, you know, whiff rate or anything like that on his various pitches. So it's a little bit harder for me to comment on that. And to be honest with you, on the road yesterday, we had a thing where our monitor was a little delayed. So instead of watching the pitches on the TV, like you guys get to do at home, I'm just looking down at the field. And it's a little bit harder for me sometimes from up there looking down at the field to always be able to know exactly what pitch it was. So yesterday, I'm gonna have to back out of giving too many opinions. But I think he's getting there, and I think he's going to be fine. And I think they have bigger problems, to be honest with you, than Jose Barrios.
Well, they certainly do when it comes to at the plate. And we'll stick with swing and miss stuff here, because someone who has swung and missed at a career high rate right now is a guy who we saw break his bat over his knee yesterday. And Dan, you said on the broadcast, Vladimir Guerrero is missing pitches that he normally wouldn't. I know that Vlad is still top 20 in WRC Plus right now. He's been a top 20 hitter in baseball to start the year, and a slump for Vlad is a little different than everyone else, but you sounded yesterday like you're picking up on some real frustration from him.
Well, I mean, you see a guy break a bat over his knee, and, you know, it's kind of obvious how he's feeling. And I think there's a collective frustration. I don't remember the exact situation, but I think there was a runner in scoring position when that happened, right? I think Bo had doubled or something like that. I think there's collective frustration on the team. Even the guys who say, we don't read anything, we don't listen to anything, we don't watch anything, they have a very good idea that it's a huge topic of conversation that they're hitting 181 or whatever it is with runners in scoring position. So I think everybody's fuse is a little bit shorter in those kind of situations. And, you know, coming into the season, this is a team everybody expected to score a ton of runs like they did last year. And as you said, Blake, Vladdy's been good, but he hasn't been, you know, all world like he was last year. And he's got high expectations for himself. I think he's getting pitched a little bit differently and tougher. Everything is away, away, away. I mean, how often have you seen them hang a pitch to him? He is missing some pitches he normally hits, but I think he's also getting pitch tough. But this is part of the challenge of baseball. They've adjusted. Now he's got to adjust. And I don't know. I don't know if he's pressing. I'm not going to get inside his head and say, hey, he slammed a bat over his leg. He's pressing. I can't say he's frustrated. Like, that's obvious. You don't do what he did unless he's frustrated. But hopefully with Bichette heating up in front of him, and hopefully soon Teoscar gets going behind him, and then, you know, things click in for him a little bit more.
So, yeah, my question was just on Teoscar. Like, what does it mean if he's going and the confidence that he's there? Was that going to help Vlad get better pitches? Is that something that you hopefully anticipate happening soon?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, he had that one big hit, Ailish, and then he didn't look good in New York. You know, everything is magnified when it's not going well, and it's not going well right now. So, you know, people see three bad games of Teoscar, you know, since he's come back from the IL after the one good game, and it's like, when's it going to click in? And you know, his timing looks a little bit off. That's what Tabby thought. And again, I think everybody's trying a little bit too hard right now, and they all want to hit a 5-run homer to help the team, and they just have to relax. They're good enough. They just have to relax. He'll get going. He's got 2.5 years of being a, you know, top 25 offensive player in baseball. He's had three bad days. He'll be fine. He'll get going. You know, Bo's going now. That was going to happen. Springer, Bichette, Vladdy, Teoscar. By the end of the year, that should all be fine. It looks a little better at the bottom of the lineup. Kirk is hitting a little bit more. You know, to me, the two guys you want to see doing more than they are right now are Gurriel and Chapman. Those are two guys who are not hitting at what you would expect their numbers to be. I still do feel, though, sometimes there is a sameness about this lineup that they weren't really able to, you know, make significant changes to in the off season, you know, you got a righty on the mound, and the first eight batters in the Blue Jay lineup are righties, and you don't want to get just any lefty. We've seen that the wrong lefties don't help at all. You want to get the right lefty, and they weren't able to get the right lefty or two in the off season. But I'm not sure this is not going to be a topic of the All-Star break or the trading deadline, I should say, and into the off season as well. I do think still they need a little bit more variety in this lineup, both in terms of getting a couple of good lefty batters and the style of hitter they get.
Yeah, they definitely got the wrong lefties. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, they got those guys in spades. Like, there's no question. They're killing it in the wrong lefty department.
Yeah, Zimmer is technically left-handed.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, Dan, I'm so glad that you went there, because this is how I'm feeling too, right? It's okay. I don't know about Chapman, because he had the numbers last year, and they're kind of sneaky close to what he did last season. So I'm going, all right, like, maybe you are kind of just not the offensive profile that you were in your heyday, and that you've taken a bit of a step back. Gurriel, I'm less worried about, because this is classic Gurriel, where I write him off and I go bump him down the lineup, and then he's going to have a month where he carries the offense and everyone goes, hey, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is one of the best contracts in baseball, blah, blah, blah. Like, I've just lived this Gurriel life before, right? Mm-hmm. I get it. What you said about not having the lefty bat, though, this is how I've been feeling all week, is, okay, are the bats going to normalize to a certain degree? Of course they are. Is Vladdy going to hit better? Bo already turning around, all this different stuff. Runners in scoring position, it feels like winning 2-1. It's going to normalize to a degree. But I'm sure you saw the Alden Gonzalez report that basically Jose Ramirez chose Cleveland over Toronto. I'm sure you saw Blair's accompanying piece where it's going to haunt me till my dying days that it was three of Randall Grichuk, Kevin Biggio, Alejandro Kirk, and Pearson would have been the package. Like, I'll never be able to watch any of those guys play baseball. I'm going to take that to my grave. It hurts me every day. It's the first thing I wake up thinking about. It's the last thing I think of going to sleep. It kind of feels like they had that in the bag, or they thought they were going to do that, or they thought they were going to get Schwarber. They gave a competitive offer for Schwarber, fell short. I think the Freddie Freeman thing was a little bit far-fetched, like, especially given his contract. But they missed on Schwarber, and I know they were competitive on Schwarber. I've heard it from multiple people. And now we have this Ramirez thing, and it kind of felt like they struck out in their offseason, and we didn't talk about it because they landed Chapman at the end, and we went, oh, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to that, and you and I talked enough during the off season in February, March, and whenever these things were happening. Like, I may be in the minority, and you know, analytics people may tell me I'm completely off base, but I do think you need more variety in your lineup. I think a pitcher can get very, very comfortable if he continues to see the same thing at bat after at bat. Now, Bo is different than Vladdy, and Vladdy's different than Teoscar. I understand all that, but there are a lot of similarities between a lot of the right-handed batters. And again, you got to get the right lefties, as we discussed. Yeah. So I do think
more diplomatically by you, but yeah.
Yes, so thank you. I minored in diplomacy in university. Yeah. So yeah. I do think they need more variety to reach their peak as an offensive team. The other thing that happens to them as well when they're all righties is once other teams go to the bullpen, you know, then it's a whole different story. Then the other manager gets to choose who he wants, and he's optimizing his matchup. So I'm not saying it's the difference between a 90-win team and a 100-win team or anything like that. That's too much. But I do think there needs to be more variety offensively in this lineup. And I think what happened in the offseason is they said, we want two things. We want a third baseman, and we want a left-handed batter or switch hitter. It doesn't matter. So we want a left-handed batter, and we want a third baseman. If we can get them in the same guy, let's get them. They couldn't do that. Now they got to decide, what do they want? They can only get one out of two, and they opted to get a third baseman, which that part I don't argue with. They needed a third baseman. As great as Espinal was, remember in the offseason, and who knows what the future holds, but in the offseason, it was Biggio and Espinal sharing the job, and we'd all agree that Kevin Biggio is much better off at second base than third base. So they needed a third baseman, and they got Matt Chapman, and they hoped for a bounce back to where he was in 2018 and 19. And it's not like they shouldn't expect that. He's 29 years old. He's not 35 years old or anything like that. So, you know, I think his numbers are going to tick up as well. And the last thing, again, and I'm not saying everything is fine, because it's not fine, but I'm on their baseball reference page right now. We talk about Gurriel, you know, and he's not going yet. You know, offense is down significantly in baseball this year. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who's hitting .243 with two home runs and rarely walks, his OPS plus is 98, which means he's basically an average hitter right now. He's 2% below average in terms of OPS. Like, he's not doing much of anything by his standards, and he's an average hitter in baseball right now. Offense is down tremendously this year, and whether it's the drag on the ball or whatever it is, like, it's none of us can deny that offense is down. So if a guy puts up like 85% of what he did last year, he's having about as good a season.
Hey, I'm with you, and I loved what you said also, where you're like, it shouldn't be that hard to make a good baseball. I'm like, I know, why is it so hard?
It's ridiculous.
Like, just make a good baseball. Why just make one good baseball? Like,
and what I don't understand is everybody says, well, in Japan, they use a baseball that comes out of a factory, and it's tacky, and everybody loves it. So let's do that here. Like, why? Yeah. I just don't get it.
I'm obsessed with that Japan ball now. You've made me obsessed with the Japan ball now. I'm like, get one of those. Let's go get it.
Yeah.
Thank you for distracting me from the Jose
Ramirez sadness. Yes.
Good. Well, just like the seeing that report. Like, and listen, it's Jeff Blair. This didn't come from some random internet blog, right? Like, Jeff Blair says it, then I'm taking it as pretty well gospel. Three of Grichuk, Biggio. Like, Kevin Biggio, I don't even really count as on this baseball team, and Grichuk isn't. So it's, yeah. Whew. Okay, I'm over it. I'll move on. Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer for Sportsnet. Thanks so much for the time today. And yes, congratulations on your son's graduation. Enjoy the
time
off.
Thank you. I will be back down at the ballpark Monday when Seattle comes to town. Look forward to talking to you guys next week.
Can't wait. See you, Dan.
See you.
Dan Shulman. Oh, that Ramirez trade. Like, again, I just – when I read it 100 times. Like, it's one of those things where – you know when something happens in sports that it's just like you lose in overtime, right? In hockey, you go, I can't believe this game is over. Like, this game, it can't be over. They're going to review it. Something's going to happen. I'm not – this can't be done. That's how I feel about the Ramirez trade, where I'm like, come on, you'll still come here for that, right? Like, that something has to be done. Something has to be done here. Like,
you're thinking it's a long con by the agent to sign a below-market deal and then force his way to Toronto.
I just – the fact – because we were talking about, like, hey, it could be Aurelvis and Gabriel Moreno. And then there was the report that seems not correct about Alek Manoah.
Manoah?
Well, listen, there's a pretty large discrepancy here between give us your arguably best starter who's on a rookie deal and maybe give us Randall Grichuk and Alejandro Kirk. Like, oh, God. It's just painful to look at that trade package. I was joking about this with a buddy 2 nights ago where we were talking about it. And it's like, it's going to go down in Toronto lore, like, it's not quite the same because Toronto actually turned this trade down, but you know the Leafs were offered Chris Pronger when he wanted out of Edmonton for Alex Steen, and that is just – and then the worst part is that Toronto traded him a year later for Lee Stempniak, and it turned out to be like a double loss. They were like, we're not trading this guy. He's our future captain. And then they were like, we will trade him, but only for a guy that got off to a hot start and a week into being his Toronto career. It was a penalty killer, like bad all around. But this is going to go down as my number one what-if Blue Jays trade, like for my lifetime. So they need to win because it's win or I can't sleep forever thinking about the Jose Ramirez trade. There's no sleep tonight if the Toronto Maple Leafs win. There's no sleep tonight if they lose. Either way, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. Follow on Twitter and Instagram. Do all those nice things. JD, Blake, and Ailish. We'll talk to you tomorrow.